Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
A warm welcome to Africa Link from Bonn, Germany. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. In this edition, Liberia is to start using an experimental drug to treat two doctors infected with the Ebola virus.
Every drug has collateral effect. But excuse me, do we have a choice? If you don't give these drugs, these people will die, okay?
The United Nations warns South Sudan rival leaders they face sanctions if fighting continues. But this former UN diplomat says talk is cheap.
We have never really seen a practical outcome of this fight.
And residents of Ghana's oil-rich Takoradi region are getting disillusioned years after oil was discovered. These stories and more in the next 25 minutes. Stay calm and keep it Africa Link.
Top story.
Lifeline for Liberia. Two Liberian doctors infected with Ebola will begin receiving the experimental drug ZMapp. The move comes after the World Health Organization, WHO, allowed the use of the untested drug. According to WHO, the death toll from the worst ever Ebola outbreak has climbed to over 1,000, including a Spanish priest. I asked David Heyman, a professor of infectious disease epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, whether this experimental drug will make a difference.
The virus cannot be stopped by treating patients. The virus can be stopped by three principal measures. First is good infection control in hospitals so health workers and others in the hospital don't become infected. Second is community involvement, community understanding about how the infection is spread and what can be done by individuals in the community to prevent themselves from being infected, either during burial practices or caring for sick people. The third and most important after hospital infection control is tracing all those who had contact with a patient with Ebola and putting them under surveillance for a fever for a period of up to 30 days.
So would you say that that we are taking the wrong approach, or rather Africa is taking the wrong approach by calling out for the use of these experimental drugs?
What Africa should be doing is what national governments decide to do. But they should not let go of those three basic principles of how to stop an outbreak. If they would like to try new medicines and vaccines, then that's their choice. And Liberia requested through the U.S. government access to a new medication, antibodies, that would protect, hopefully, people who are already infected and make them well. Apart from that, trying new medicines to save lives is very important. And possibly trying new vaccines in health workers, understanding that if they do try those vaccines, they must also continue with rigorous prevention of transmission to themselves and others because those are experimental vaccines.
And precisely that, because they're experimental, we know that there's a scarcity of them. So how tough is it going to be to administer these drugs anyway to all these people who are infected?
Well, it will be very difficult. And what some countries might want to choose is to find the survivors of Ebola and with their permission, collect antibody from them. That would mean taking their blood, taking the antibodies that they've developed against the virus, concentrating them, making sure they don't still contain virus, and then providing that to people who are sick in the hopes that that antibody will help them get better. That's another process which could be considered, but again, it would have to be done under rigorous research trial conditions.
And presumably it's going to be very difficult to do that kind of research because we already have an outbreak.
That's correct. But unfortunately, these drugs and medicines are only able to show their effectiveness during an outbreak. And that's the predicament.
Now, as an expert on infectious diseases, how soon do you see this outbreak being contained?
Well, unfortunately, this outbreak will continue for some time. And it's going to depend on how committed governments become to preventing continued transmission and doing what's recommended internationally. Sometimes governments have a tendency to try to stop an outbreak by putting up a police force around an outbreak site. All that does is gives security that things are under control. The best is good public health in those three measures that we talked about earlier: prevention of spread in hospitals through good infection control and protection of health workers, tracing of contacts and putting them under fever surveillance, and helping communities understand how they themselves can stop transmission and prevent infection.
David Heyman, a professor of infectious disease epidemiology. Nearly 300 people have died of Ebola in Liberia. The West African nation has now quarantined three provinces as it seeks to stop transmission of the virus. The news of an Ebola drug coming, even though unapproved, must have come as a relief to many of them, as Julius Kanuba reports.
Liberia's Information Minister Louis Brown said the move to request U.S. authorities to send the experimental ZMapp drug to treat Ebola patients was made without hesitation. According to him, the drug has somewhat proven to confront the deadly virus, as shown by the improvement in health of the two American aid workers who contracted the virus in Liberia but were flown home and given the untested medication.
We think those who have been affected should be given the chance to have that tested on them if they give their consent to do so. And so we're looking forward to working with our international partners on a clinical trial of that and any other drug that is known to, at least is being somehow accepted to have some curative effect on Ebola victims. We think our people also deserve to make that choice.
On the associated risk of administering the experimental drug to Ebola patients in Liberia, Minister Brown insisted it was necessary for the government to take a gamble for life, as the only alternative for Ebola is death. The news that Liberia is to receive the first limited sample of the ZMapp drug to treat two of the nation's over 500 Ebola cases sparked some excitement among Liberians.
For me, I think it is good, even though it was previously tested on primates, and now it has been tested on two American health workers, and we are getting reports that it's working well. So I think that it is a good venture. It is a good thing that the Liberian government has done.
It's a very, very good thing to hear that it has been approved and it's on its way to Liberia. At least it will reduce the death rate as it relates to Ebola in our country.
Well, I think it's a welcoming development. This is a medicine that has not been approved. It's not licensed yet to be officially used for humans. But, you know, we are very anxious to see a cure to this virus. And so we are very anxious to see it worked. And let's hope that the two Liberian doctors who are here in Liberia who have requested to be the first out of Americans to be tested, it will work on them.
Liberian medical doctor and former health minister Senator Peter Kuma told DW, regardless of ethical values, there is nothing wrong to administer the ZMapp drug in Liberia on Ebola patients.
Listen, life is not without risk. Even the drugs that are approved by the FDA, by the different pharmaceutical regulatory arms of countries around the world, every drug has collateral effect. We as doctors, once you are giving these drugs to people, you will wash out for collateral side effects, adverse effects. So once this drug is given to our people here, clinicians will monitor. But excuse me, do we have a choice? If you don't give these drugs, these people will die, okay?
There is hope in Liberia that the ZMapp drug could heal the two doctors who contracted the Ebola virus.
That report was compiled by Julius Kanuba in Monrovia.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
From New York with threats. UN Security Council ambassadors warned South Sudan's warring leaders on Tuesday they face sanctions if they do not stop fighting. The UN diplomats are visiting South Sudan in a bid to end 8 months of conflict that has pushed the young nation to the brink of famine. Peter Schumann is a former director of the UN mission in Sudan, and he's been telling me what impact the visit may have.
It's not the first time that the Security Council has threatened with sanctions or sanction type of action. They have done this in the past when there was a problem between North and South Sudan. They have done this at the beginning of this new violence, which started the middle of December last year. And we have never really seen a practical outcome of these threats. But we have seen a continuation of broken threats, not really taking a firm action. And I think it's also very difficult for the council to, you know, play with sanctions where they can force the government and the opposition to take certain action which they are not prepared to undertake. So, you know, the instrument of sanctions in a civil war type of situation has so far never really been successful.
The UN envoys have also warned that more arms are being brought into South Sudan. But why haven't they placed an arms embargo?
They can, of course, impose an arms embargo, but they will not be able to enforce it. Plus, I think the government of South Sudan will object to an arms embargo. So an arms embargo would then be a one-sided event threatening or imposed on the rebels, and then you have immediately another problem. So an arms embargo may sound nice, but again, I'm always emphasizing that in a civil war-type situation, the instruments which we apply in a conflict between states do not really produce any results. We have to be a lot more creative in trying out new things. And this is my major criticism of the Security Council. They behave as if there was a conflict between states. This is an internal conflict between rebel groups, whatever you want to call them, but it's an internal conflict where the government will always look towards the council as a support element. I don't think that Salva Kiir and his group of military leaders will ever agree to sanctions or arms embargoes or instruments like this.
Talking of the president, Salva Kiir reportedly said that the conflict cannot be solved militarily. But his actions on the ground speak otherwise, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Salva Kiir has lost a lot of credibility. He's saying one thing, but then his spokesperson, Michael McQueen, and others, are, through their action and what they say, contradicting him. I have the impression that he is not really in charge. It is a group of people who sort of pull in different directions, and I have the impression that they still pursue the military option a lot more than the political solution.
Former director of the UN mission in Sudan, Peter Schumann.
Africa on the move.
In for a penny, in for a pound. That's probably the logic behind crowdfunding. It is an online form of financing that brings together investors with schemes or projects in need of funding. Cameroonian honey entrepreneur Jacques-Georges Badiang got involved with a French crowdfunding platform after failing to secure a bank loan. Now his business is up and running, and even the banks have taken notice. This report by Sébastien Matineau is presented by Nathalie Muller.
Moving overseas to make a living was never really an option for Jacques-Georges Badiang. Even back when he was a university student, the native Cameroonian wanted to show it was possible to create and build something in his home country. He made plans to start his own business, and his idea for that business was honey. There were already a few beekeepers in his neighbourhood, and he decided there was a future in the sweet stuff, so he set to work.
It all started at home, in my mother's kitchen. I washed the glass jars and filled them with honey, and then I went from house to house to sell them.
His one-man operation soon turned into a booming business, which he called L'Émierie. The company markets honey from more than 200 local beekeepers after filtering and packaging the product in Douala, Cameroon's largest port city. But when Badiang's business started growing, he ran into a problem familiar to many small businesses in Africa. The banks refused to give him a loan because he couldn't convince them he could pay the money back. But last year, Badiang found a solution. He came across a new France-based crowdfunding platform called Bluebees that was about to go online. Through the platform, Badiang was able to borrow 20,000 euros from 100 creditors to fund his honey startup L'Émierie in 2013.
These 20,000 euros helped us a lot. We paid the money back 6 months later.
It was a win-win situation for all involved. Badiang paid the loan back, plus 10% in interest. 1% of that went to Bluebees. Emmanuel Paya is the platform's managing director.
Jacques is a really serious entrepreneur, and he needs us because he has no access to the banks. In Cameroon, they would ask him for surety, and he can't provide it. Despite the fact that his firm has been in existence for 10 years, the bank still asks for a high interest rate.
Since its launch in 2013, Bluebees has helped support other projects in developing countries. In the last few months, other crowdfunding platforms have also started to go online. There's Fadev, for example, and Babylone, which taps the African diaspora as a source of potential investors. Most crowdfunding sites for Africa operate out of Europe. And that's no surprise, says investor Patrick Schofield, who's currently building his own platform in South Africa.
At this stage, crowdfunding, as you say, is very new, and a lot of people don't understand it and a lot of people don't trust it as yet. Payment systems are a major, major hold in Africa for crowdfunding. Then internet access, something we take for granted in Europe and the States. In Africa, you not only have limited internet access, but it's expensive.
Apart from finding funding, the platforms can also assist with business plans, alert online communities to the project, and help entrepreneurs recruit new clients. Bajang says the Bluebees loan also boosted his own creditworthiness as an entrepreneur, and his company can now draw an overdraft of around 7,500 euros.
And our bank, which previously would never listen to us, now has a better understanding of what we do.
But if Bajang needs money, it's still cheaper to turn to crowdfunding. He recently received a second loan of 15,000 euros from Bluebees. This time, he's planning to put it towards a new venture, beeswax.
Natalie Muller presented that report by Sebastian Martineau. When Ghana's oil began to gush out, the West African nation was determined to avoid the resource curse. But the prosperity many had hoped for, like in the oil-rich coastal city of Takoradi, has so far benefited just a tiny minority. Emily Sharwin with this report by Gwendoline Helser.
The fish market of Sekondi in Takoradi is still a very busy place, but the fishermen here are no longer landing the big catches they used to 10 years ago. Emmanuel Ni Botchwe is the secretary of the Ghana Inshore Fishermen Association. He says the oil business is to blame.
Well, right down, the fish has gone down drastically. Because when prospecting for oil, the type of dynamite and bombs they use under the sea to demarcate where the oil is, that you can scare the fish.
According to official Ghanaian statistics, about 2.4 million people along the coast depend mainly on fishing. Since the number of oil rigs and oil tankers is constantly increasing, local folk have to compete with the oil companies. There are frequent collisions at night between big supply vessels and small, inadequately secured fishing boats. In addition, Tullow Oil and its partners have earmarked a radius of 500 meters from the rigs as a restricted enclave for fishing activities.
Some of the navies are good that they warn you. Some too, they say they pour hot water on you. This is what the fishermen come to report to us. They pour hot water on you. Just to deter you from not going that far.
Not only offshore, but also on land, the residents are facing new challenges. Since the oil boom, Takoradi has become one of the most expensive cities in Ghana. Living in Oil City, as it's known, is not easy for people with a modest income, as resident Obeng Seth explains.
As the inception of the oil, everything, price of items, everything has gone up. Rents, everything has gone up. Now, if you're going for like a room, the cost they'll give to you, it's too much.
Rent for single rooms has doubled. Land prices even tripled. Two-bedroom apartments can be rented for between $2,000 and $6,000 per month. The payment has to be made in U.S. dollars, and as is usual in Ghana, for at least 1 year in advance. Emmanuel Collins Arma Bracco is an accommodation broker who specializes in expats.
Most landlords are actually targeting high rollers, excuse me to say, the big boys in town, people that are working with oil companies, or people that are working with companies that have money or higher incomes.
The middle class see themselves in a difficult position to buy land to build houses for their families, says Joseph Kweku Minla, who works with the Ghana Revenue Authority.
Some of us are public servants. We don't earn that much like how some people in the oil companies earn. The land has really increased in terms of prices.
Today, 4 years after the oil extraction began, people are still impatiently waiting for their share in the black gold.
That report was written by Gwendolyn Hilsen. You're listening to Africa Link program from our studios of Deutsche Welle, Bonn, Germany. When we return, we stay in Ghana, but this time, someone is making a difference.
Making a difference.
Africa's entertainment industry is growing rapidly. In Ghana, one man is credited for helping to nurture young aspiring actors. By directing the youngsters on face expression, stage movement and intonation, Abel White is making a difference not only on the actors, but in Ghana's entertainment industry. Isaac Kalechi reports.
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so Maureen, out first before you go around.
More than a dozen men and women are rehearsing for a play that will tour through Ghana's major cities in the coming months. They are closely watched by the man behind the project, Ebo White.
We end every play of ours with a choreographed dance, and that is what we are working now. For a play, we take about 6 weeks to go through a play. And then for every rehearsal period within those 6 weeks, 30 minutes of that period is devoted to the choreography. It's quite intense, but not right from the beginning. The beginning when we begin by reading through the script and then discussing the script. So that one, if you are not part of it, you may think nothing much is happening.
These rehearsals are for a play called Unforgiven, which is based on a poem called Still Arise by African-American writer Maya Angelou. It is centered around qualities such as self-esteem, forgiveness, letting go of the past. Uncle Ebo White, as he is generally known, writes all his plays, which have a general theme of morality and family bonding running through them. Ebo White is a 60-year-old former marketing executive. He told me about his first encounter with the world of theatre.
Well, I got into the theatre in secondary school when I became part of the theatre group at school, purely by accident. I wasn't part of the group, but the group was rehearsing a play. And so I was standing in the window and watched them rehearse.
Ebo White's focus is on quality and successful commercialization. He spends more than 10,000 euros on every production. Among his challenges is finding sponsors. At the beginning, this wasn't easy.
My first play did not work well. I had taken a loan to finance that one, and it took me 2 years to pay for the loan. My second play, I sold a car I was using then to finance it. The car did not come back. It was my third play that really turned the fortunes around because we sold out. We did 2 days, two shows in a day, and we sold out both shows and had to send people out because we didn't have any more room.
The plays of Uncle Ebo White can be said to have transformed lives. Pakwesi Asari is a journalist who has seen several productions.
I mean, watching Ebo White's plays over the years, you can clearly see in the plays that it gives motivation to people. And this latest one that I watched, had to do with the Black Stars, preparations towards the World Cup and some of the things that happen. For me, it tells me that, you know, you can be whatever you wish to be if you put your mind to it.
Let's go again. So let's go from this road that I call home, so am I. 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3, and 1, 2, 3.
Isaac Kalechi with that dramatic report in Accra. And before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. Liberia is to begin treating two doctors with an Ebola experimental drug. UN ambassadors have warned South Sudan rival leaders they face sanctions if the fighting continues. Residents of Ghana's oil-rich Takoradi region are still waiting to reap benefits from the country's oil revenue. That does it for this edition of Africa Link. For comments and suggestions, send us a text message to +491609575910 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Thanks for listening. I'm Crispin Mokideu. Take care.